morning. Now, some of you look forward to my stories and even enjoyed the story about the frog prince. So here's another one involving a frog. Once upon a time, in a lush green marsh, there lived a clever but boastful frog. He was well known among other animals for his quick wit and his sharp tongue. One day, as summer ended and the air heard two ducks discussing their journey to a warmer land. "Winter is coming," said one of the ducks. "It's time for us to fly south, where it's warm and food is plentiful." The frog, realizing that he could not survive the freezing winter in the marsh, desperately wanted to go with them. "Please, dear friends, take me with you," he pleaded. "But you cannot fly," one duck replied. Frog thought for a moment. His eyes lit up with an idea. "What if we find a strong stick? Each of you can hold one end in your beaks, and I will bite down on the middle. That way, when you fly, I will be carried along with you." Frog's cleverness and agreed to try. They found a sturdy stick. Each grasped an end, and the frog clamped his mouth onto the middle as tightly as he could. And with great effort, the duck slow looked up in amazement. "What a brilliant idea," they exclaimed. "Who thought of such a clever way to travel?" Welled with pride, he couldn't resist claiming credit for the idea. And forgetting that he needed to keep his mouth shut, he proudly croaked, "It was me." With a loud plop, from that day on, the animals in the marsh remembered the lesson. Sometimes it's best to stay silent, especially when pride tempts us to speak. Ego. Ego. That's been the downfall of many, literally. And the problem isn't just today, the problem arose even in Jesus' day. When he delivered the Sermon on the Mountain there in Matthew 5, 6, and 7, he was speaking of this to that crowd. It's one of the greatest dangers in our spiritual life, the temptation to do good for the sake of being noticed. Ego. What is ego? A desire for self-importance, for recognition, for praise. And it can quietly creep into our acts of righteousness, turning them from acts of worship into performances for human applause. Jesus in Matthew chapter 6, which Jonathan read, warns us against this showy righteousness and instead calls for us to have humility in our giving, in our praying, in our spiritual life. And this morning, for the few moments we share together, let's think about that. Jesus says something interesting in those verses. He, in a sense, says that we ought not be trumpet sounders. If you're with me in Matthew 6, let's look again at verse 2. "Therefore, when you do a charitable deed, do not sound a trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may have glory from men. Assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward." Some of you are old-timers like I am. And you possibly went to bed at night way back when listening to Johnny Carson on TV. He hosted that program for 30 years, from 1962 to 1982. And if you remember, he had a sidekick. His name was Ed McMahon, and he was the one who was always chit-chatting but he was also the announcer for that program all 30 years that it ran. And you remember this phrase, he would say, "Here's Johnny." Maybe I ought to try that. I could have Jason stand up here with the microphone and he could say, "Here's Ronnie." That's what they called me when I was a kid. Ronnie. And I could climb up here and I could do a little jig and said, "Aren't I good? Aren't I great? Who do you appreciate?" And you could all throw up in the pews because it would be sickening. You could probably have stayed home this morning and turned on your television set, and you could have had a whole array of religious programs you could have listened to, and many of them you could say were of a Class A Broadway quality production, because religion is big business, I'm sorry to say. So they want to call attention to themselves. Jesus's day had the exact same problem. They sounded their trumpets, he said. Where? They sounded their trumpets in the streets. And he said they even sounded their trumpets in the synagogues where they worshiped. Wherever they sought praise, they were calling attention to themselves. Now, Ronnie, you say? Do religious programs still trump their trumpets today? We don't do that here. Remember last week or week before I talked about my new best friend? ChatGPT AI. So I was curious again, so I typed in the question, do religious programs today on TV still use trumpets? Within 5 seconds, 8 of the major programs that you would recognize flashed up. Literally, they use trumpets. I don't know that that's what Jesus is emphasizing, but he's sure emphasizing that people were trumpeting themselves to call attention. And so clearly this verse here in Matthew is a warning to us, as it was to those in Jesus' day, that seeking to be glorified and honored by men is not what God desires. And I think we need to be reminded of that lesson. I often ask myself, at least, why am I up here in church service? Why are you up here? Why, whether you're preaching or whether you're teaching or whether you're singing or whether you're acting or doing whatever, no matter what it is, why are you up here in the service of the church? Are we looking for the pat on the back? Are we looking for the applause of the audience? Are we looking for the attaboys? Ego, that's what Christ was talking about. So look in verse 2 again. Do not sound a trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may have glory from men. Assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward. You all remember the TV program about letting go of your pancakes? Ego, ego, let go of my ego. Very similar to that. There's a second thing Jesus talks about here in these first 6 verses of Matthew chapter 6. He says some people can't keep secrets. Some secrets people do keep. Possibly you held one in your hand sometime in your life, whether you like the taste or don't like the taste, you probably had one once. I'm talking about Coca-Cola. One of the world's best kept secrets is the recipe for Coca-Cola. Now, Coca-Cola, the company, is not very generous with their specifics as to how much each brand that they make, and they make a number of different flavors of different things. But collectively, they sell 2.2 billion servings each and every day across 200 countries in the world. I don't know whether Coke represents 80% of that, but I think we'll all agree it's probably a vast majority of it. That's over 800 billion servings a year. It's the world's most popular and the world's best-selling. Produced in over 1,000 different plants around the world. And the full recipe of what's in a Coke is kept a secret. And that's interesting because it was invented in 1886 by a man named John S. Pemberton. The official written version of the recipe for Coke is kept in a safe in a vault at the World of Coca-Cola Museum in Atlanta. It's rumored that there are only two executives at any one time who know or can get access to the full formula. So in order to keep it secret, Coca-Cola has sourced out the contents of Cokes to so many different suppliers that no single supplier knows the whole recipe or formula for a Coca-Cola. They say the real secret is in something called Merchandise 7X. That's what gives it its taste. Represents only 1% of what's in your can. But nobody knows what it is. They didn't want to get a patent on Coca-Cola because patents only last for 20 years. So they took it out as a trade name, which lasts forever. So for 139 years, the recipe for Coca-Cola, though people have tried to reverse engineer it, the full recipe is still a secret. I think that's amazing because we have a hard time keeping a secret for a few days. Sometimes we have a hard time keeping a secret for a few hours. Tell me something juicy. And there's a good likelihood that I'm going to share it. In fact, Tricia says I tell everything to everybody. I don't think that's true, Trish, but every now and then, don't we just explode within knowing that we know something that we would love to tell somebody else? And if it happens to be news about us being good or having done this or that, something that gives us importance, don't we just want it to leak out? That's just so human nature. Ego. But here in Matthew 6, Jesus is specific when he talks about giving in secret. I'm reading from the New King James. It talks about charitable deeds. If you happen to have the Old King James, it probably says alms. That's a great old word. Alms, giving to the needy, giving to the poor. Charitable deeds. Translated the New King James Version. But look at verse 3 of Matthew 6. But when you do a charitable deed, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. That's an interesting way to talk about giving charitable deeds. First, I want you to notice that it assumes that your right hand is giving alms or charitable deeds. But when you do a charitable deed, it says, not if you do a charitable deed. So the plan of God is that we as Christians, as the body of the church, do charitable deeds. Give alms, if you want to read it from the Old King James. We do that individually. We do that collectively as the body of the church. You know, some churches have what they call pledge cards. I don't know if you've ever been a place like that. You put down each year how much you say you're going to give each week or each month. And that helps them plan their budget, having a reasonable idea of what comes in. My grandmother went to such a church. I have no idea what her pledge amount was. But undoubtedly, knowing her circumstances, it would be a very minute part of their budget. It would be the widow's mite that you might read about in Scripture. Well, for a while, she got really sick church and therefore didn't give. Church sent her done notices, past due notices. I thought that appalling. But you can go into other places, you can go into churches and you can see little brass plaques attached to everything. This pew was donated by the Bigwood family. Maybe this reception room out there was given by the Hobnoses. And look at the stained glass windows. They were given by the Seamies family. On and on it goes. But verse 3, it says, when you do your charitable deed, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. And then he adds in verse 4, that your charitable deed may be in secret. And your Father who sees in secret will himself reward you openly. Ego, ego. Ego, my ego. Lord, please help me. Ego, my ego. Final thought this morning. He says, you shall not be like the hypocrite. Hypocrisy abounds all around. Politics is full of hypocrites. Again, many of you aren't as old as I am, but I want to give you one example from way back when, which really has come down to be, I think, the most famous political scandal in modern American history. Let me set the stage. We had a prominent 49-year-old United States senator who was from Colorado. And he was a Democratic candidate for the presidency in 1988. Considered the front runner in the Democratic field due to his, what they call, progressive ideas and youthful energy, representing a more modern, reformed-oriented vision for the country. He was charismatic. He was articulate leader. He ran a campaign that focused on change and renewal, positioning himself as an outsider that was going to go and attack the political establishment. And he was advocate for environmental issues, arms control, government reform, all of those things. His name was Gary Hart. In 1987, Hart's campaign was gaining a lot of momentum. Rumors began to circulate that he was having an extramarital affair. The press, media we like to call them today, had long been aware of his personal life, but they refrained from investigating it. They're often hypocrites themselves. Then on May the 3rd, 1987, the story of Gary Hart's fling with a 29-year-old blonde model, actress, and socialite, her name was Donna Rice, finally erupted in view when the Miami Herald newspaper published it. There was a picture of them on a yacht. Just for your information, the name of the yacht was So as it unraveled, the tale included accounts of her visits to his townhouse in Washington, about boat trips, his promises to her about the future between them. And then in a press conference on May 5th, he admitted, quote, that he made a mistake, had a lapse in judgment, and had made a personal mistake. But he said, I have not committed any immoral act. 3 days later, on May the 8th, he withdrew from the presidential race. By that time, it was clear and all over the country that the affair had overshadowed his campaign. Public trust in him had eroded significantly. And then on May the 25th, a more informative picture came out of Donna Rice now sitting on Gary Hart's lap while they were in that yacht. and then trying to salvage his reputation on September the 22nd. He went on TV to Ted Koppel, you remember him? ABC's Nightline. And he said that he was absolutely faithful throughout his marriage. So the clock kept tipping. On December the 15th, he decided to re-enter the presidential race. And on January the 9th, 1988, during the Democratic presidential debate in New Hampshire, he made the statement that if elected, he wouldn't be the first adulterer in the White House. I don't think he was lying when he said that. I don't think he would have been the first adulterer in the White House. And I don't think he would have been the last adulterer in the White House. So finally, on January the 15th, 1988, during the Democratic presidential debate in Iowa, he maintained, this is important, that there is a difference between public morality and private morality. Ultimately, the public didn't select him as the candidate for that year's presidential election. They felt that anyone who wanted to have ethical leadership in the White House, but yet thought morality was situational, was not their choice. We might stand back and say, we could call that man a hypocrite. A hypocrite, if you looked it up, that somebody who has a false front, somebody purports to be what they aren't. The Greek original word carries the connotation of an actor, someone who performs behind a mask. Jesus did not like hypocrites. Turn with me, if you would, over to the 23rd chapter of Matthew. I'm not going to read it all, but let me summarize as you go down through that, beginning in verse 13, how he describes hypocrites and what they did. But woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you shut up the kingdom of heaven against men, for you neither go in yourselves nor do you allow those who are eating to go in. For you devour widows' houses, for a pretense make long prayers. For you travel land and sea to win one proselyte, and when he is won, you have made him twice as much a son of hell as yourself. For you pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin and have neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice and mercy and faith. These you ought to have done without leaving the others undone. For you cleanse the outside of the cup and the dish, but inside they're full of extortion and self-indulgence. You are like whitewashed tombs, which indeed appear beautiful outwardly, but inside are full of dead men's bones and all uncleanness. And finally, even so you also outwardly appear righteous to men, but inside you are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness. Jesus didn't. And Jesus doesn't like pretenders. And he was saying in the Sermon on the Mount to those who were listening, who were hypocrites, quit playing the role of a true believer. Quit playing, quit acting out, quit going through the motions of being a godly person. Quit trying to be seen of men. Ego, ego. Dear Lord, help me let go of my ego. Go back to Matthew chapter 6, conclude in verses 5 and 6. And when you pray, you shall not be like the hypocrites, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and on the corners of the streets, that they may be seen by men. Assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward. But you, when you pray, go into your room, and when you have shut your door, pray to your Father who is in the secret place, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you openly. So the question is, what reward do we want today? Do we, as we walk out in that life, want the reward that men give? Or do we want the reward that God gives? He calls us this morning to come to Him through faith and repentance of your sin, through confessing that you believe that Jesus is the Christ. If you need to be immersed to remove those sins, let's do that today. Rise and walk, not pretending to be a follower, but being a follower. Come a few words.